The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hey there, welcome to The Undercurrent. I'm Tara Sloan. I know the statute of limitations has run out on wishing everyone a Happy New Year. If you're a Curb Your Enthusiasm fan, you know what I'm talking about. But this is the first show of 2024, so I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to say it. Happy New Year to everyone. I hope it's been a good one so far. My guest this episode is a colleague of mine. Sharks fans know Scott Hannon as a longtime Sharks defenseman. He played 626 total contests for San Jose, 16 NHL seasons. Now a Sharks analyst on NBC Sports California. What I wanted to make sure, though, that we highlighted on this podcast with Scott was the work that he does with the Junior Sharks Youth Hockey Program here. Both he and Mark Smith, who is another shark-turned-analyst, spend endless hours coaching kids in the Bay Area and imparting their endless experience and wisdom to the next generation. It really is tireless and devoted work that they do. I love Scott's perspective on life, on the game. I think he's a great analyst. I would imagine he's an excellent coach. I know he's a great dad. So check it out. Here is Scott Hannon. Scott, it's great to have you on in a slightly different context. We've been working together on some of the Sharks broadcasts. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Listen, the whole kind of, you know, impetus behind this is because I really want to get to the work you're doing with the Junior Sharks program and youth hockey in general and your passion that lies there. But we really can't get there until we start from your beginnings. So I really want to start right from the start in BC. You grew up in Surrey. And so when did hockey first come to you? Did anybody in your family play?
No, nobody did. And it was really my mom, the local community hockey rink. And I even had an older brother and he didn't play. And I just was hooked from the moment I stepped on the ice. And it was from power skating to, you know, in Canada, you get thrown at everything. So it was figure skating with my sister, power skating, and then hockey. And then when I wanted to sign up, my brother jumped on. So it was just, I guess it was in my blood. So it started early and it hasn't stopped. And I'm going on 45 right now. So
were you a fan of watching the game? It's amazing how many kids I met when I crossed Canada with hometown hockey, who actually didn't necessarily watch a ton of hockey, but they loved playing it so much. Were you a Canucks fan? Did you watch TV?
I went back and forth. So I wasn't a big watch the game. I wasn't addicted to watching it on TV. I loved the Canucks. I liked going to games, but I wasn't like, if the Canucks were playing that night, did I have to watch them? We always got hung up around playoff time. That playoff hockey was big. And I remember the big runs and, you know, 94 and when they went to the Stanley Cup final, you know, Pavel Bure, Doug Lidster, Dana, I could name a ton of them and I'd love going down to practice, but I wasn't addicted to it as much on TV. I just love playing the sport. I love playing multiple sports. I grew up playing lacrosse as well. And I hung up the hockey bag at the end of spring and played lacrosse all summer long. So I was into multiple sports. I'm a big believer in that, even in how I approach the game now.
I think that's really interesting because everybody that I talk to, and I mean without exception, everybody that I talk to who has achieved your level of success in hockey says the same thing, says it's important to mix it up. It's important to be a multi-sport athlete. It's important to have fun. So maybe go away, come back to it. But that's not necessarily, you know, how kids are steered anymore, right? Like you have the opportunity, you can play all year long. So what do you tell your youth hockey players?
It's funny. I think it's been a detriment when you hear people write books about, you know, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and all these very, very elite, even when you look at the elite of the elite, they are, and how they were able to stay so hyper-focused on a certain thing for so long. And they talk about practicing 60 hours and you hear the Kobe mantra. Like, kids can't do that. I couldn't do that growing up. I didn't want to do that growing up. And I think parents to some degree, so I try and tell them about the kids that, you know, the Mason Marchments, the, you know, Patrice Bergerons, where, you know, like these guys said that they got cut from teams, they played multiple sports. And I think the one thing when you're coaching the game, and I've coached at all levels from squirt to, you know, all the way up to, you know, 14s, and I've been on the ice with multiple different, I've helped out at NHL camps, is it comes down to what's between the ears, you know, the physical side. And I think hockey hides the physical side for the longest, because if you start at 12, well, you got to learn how to skate first.
Right.
Whereas sometimes, you know, you everybody knows how to run. Everybody knows how to do certain things. And between the ears, I think that was a big help for me, playing lacrosse, playing multiple sports. You see the things come at you in many different ways. And I think if anybody can bottle up the mental side of things, nobody has the secret sauce. But I can tell you, at the highest levels, when you get the luck to play there, is also how you think the game. And how you think the game is a tough one to teach.
Okay. So that's just, that's part of the journey, right? Just picking your player IQ, all of that. Did you always want to be a defenseman?
Yeah, pretty much from day one. I think it was, you know, coaches saw that in me, and it was just something that I always loved to do. I was a very offensive defenseman, and I could be, but sometimes when we were growing up, it was like, sometimes you just wanted your best players to play the most, and defensemen play a lot, so you can have them on the ice a lot. I think that was a key, but I think it's a little bit of, you know, how you are. Like, I look at both my sons, and one's probably a forward and one's probably a defenseman, just from the way they think the game and the way they like and where they are with what they're at. So it's pretty cool to see.
You played a great junior career with the Kelowna Rockets. Was that something you identified from a young age as, you know, wanting that to be part of your path?
No, to be honest, like, really? Well, to be honest, like, that's one of the funny things when we talk about, like, I didn't know a ton about the sport. And I remember when I got drafted into the WHL, I didn't even know what the WHL was. So, like, I was playing lacrosse, and people told me, if you don't play spring hockey, you're never going to get anywhere. And the teams and the coaches told me, if you don't play spring hockey, you might not make the team next year. And I said, okay, that's fine with me. I'm going to go play lacrosse. And then when I came back, obviously I was pretty good. So the coach was like, okay, you can be on the team. And that's kind of how my life went from young, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7 until I don't think my junior team knew this, but I went home after junior and still played lacrosse. So I didn't really tell them that, because they probably would have been unhappy. But like, when I got drafted, I went, I think it was 8th overall to Kelowna. Teams in Medicine Hat and everything were calling me, and they were like, well, would you come play? And I was like, I wouldn't come there. I don't even know where Moose Jaw is. And I was like, I won't play there. And they're like, well, what would you do? I said, well, I'll figure out another. I play Junior A. Surrey has a team. And then when Kelowna said they would pick me, well, I looked, and Kelowna's right there. I'm like, well, I'll give it a shot. And then, hey, and here I am. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, oh, that was fun. I went to camp, and this is great. I'll try this out. And then moved away at 16 and never looked back.
You know what? I mean, I love Moose Jaw. It's one of the coolest places. I love Medicine Hat too. But from a weather perspective, I think you went the right direction.
Yeah. Kelowna. And I mean, I was a Vancouver boy too. Like, so I didn't know anything. Like, it would be different. Like, nothing against Medicine Hat or Moose Jaw. I just had no comprehension of what that was. You know what I mean? I was a green, you know, green kid coming out of there. And I was like, no way am I moving that far away from home. You know, when Kelowna was 3 hours away. So it was like, you know, you could drive there. Parents could come up whenever. It wasn't, you know, a flight or, you know, then they were up there all the time, which I think was a huge help as well. It allowed, you know, when you're young and you're moving away from home and you're thrown, you know, in a completely different situation, I think you need family. And my family was always there for me.
Right. Because, I mean, you know, when I think, my daughter's 14, you know, and I think about, could she possibly, I mean, she's not on any track like this, but the thought of her moving in with a billet family at the age of 16 in 2 years, it's quite a stretch. And so I know it has to be a pretty massive adjustment for a teenager.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sitting there thinking the same thing with my oldest. He's turning 14 this January, and then I'm sitting there thinking the same thing. I'm like, wow, I can't imagine what my parents went through. Not so much allowing it, but having the strength to like, hey, you know, this is what he wants to do. And they were okay with it. It's pretty wild to think, you know, especially in today's age. I'm like sitting there thinking the same thing about my oldest. I don't know.
So at a certain point, okay, so all of a sudden you're playing major junior hockey in the Western Hockey League. And at a certain point, it has to occur to you, all right, well, this is the track potentially to the NHL.
Yeah, I think I was always of the mind, like playing at 16, I didn't play a lot. Like at the beginning of the year, I was playing a few minutes. I was sitting out games and, you know, I didn't score many points my first year junior. But I think I just learned really quickly. And I think that was part of like that mental side you talk about. When I got into a situation, it took me a little while to figure it out sometimes. But when I did, that's when I excelled. And I think that halfway through the year, I started playing a lot. And they come out with the ratings and who's the rankings of all 16-year-olds and kids drafted next year. And I was ranked fairly high, you know, all things considering. And then by the next year into my 17-year-old year was a big jump. And then, you know, all of a sudden it was like, okay, well, maybe he's rated really high. And I had a really good 17-year-old year and, you know, ended up getting picked for San Jose. So
I always think of the NHL draft as being an event for families, because of course the player is drafted, but the families have invested so much in their kid and then their sibling, all of it. Right. So, I mean, that's to me the most touching moment when you watch the draft. For you, was that your feeling? I mean, that your, you know, your parents had put so much into getting you there.
Yeah, it's wild. I think, you know, your parents, your family, you know, and the work as an individual, you put in, like, it's a lot, right? Like the choices you make over a course of your life, you know, like it's, you know, your parents do, and they put you in those situations. They get up early in the morning and you start understanding that. And I think you're right. It's a, you know, you go to the draft. Mine was in Pittsburgh, and, you know, there was a rumor I was going to go into the first round, but nobody really knew. And it turns out I did. And I think it's a culmination of a lot of things. You know, that's where the work really starts as far as the individual. But I think it was a really proud moment for my family, my parents, to my coaches back home, for everything. It was a really cool thing.
Okay. So what happened from there? Like you get drafted, you go to camp. I mean, you didn't end up playing that many games in the AHL, all things considered.
No, I think, again, it goes back to like my first camp. I think I did well. I'm not, you know, and what was it? I got sent back, you know, after your 17-year-old year, you're like, okay, this is great. This was a great experience. You know, you get sent back pretty early. And then, you know, after that, you're still young. And, you know, the way this CHL works, you can't go to the minors. You have to go back to junior when you play. And I think it was, you know, my second camp where I really kind of excelled. I think that's where Brad Stewart was there. I had a really good year. And, you know, I ended up having my first NHL games. I made the team, and I, you know, that second year, and I played five games. I played my first two games in Japan, you know, and then I ended up getting sent back to junior because I was a 19-year-old. And then I had a great junior year. But as far as like the AHL, I think that was the type of thing, the growth that I had. And, you know, Brad Stewart was a defenseman, Andre Zuzan early on and stuff like that. So you had to battle those guys. And, you know, I went into it thinking I always had confidence in myself. And that was a big thing. I wanted to prove people wrong. And there was other defensemen that were rated higher than me. And I always liked proving people wrong. And I think I did a pretty good job of that. So it was nice. And I got to play, and, you know, I think it was like 43 games down in Kentucky of the minors. And then I got called up and I ended up playing for the rest of the year. So.
And that was that. Tell me about Japan. How did that happen?
Yeah, it was wild, right? They were starting those games where the NHL was, you know, trying to expand its market. So we played Calgary over in Japan for the first two games. And I had my first two NHL hockey games in Japan in one of the Olympic pools, you know, with the diving board above. It was kind of wild. And, you know, it's my claim to fame. I had 2 points in my first NHL hockey game. And I said I led the NHL in scoring for 2 weeks because no other team played for 2 weeks until we got home. So
perfect.
I had uncles and brothers and everybody calling me up. You know, it was be like, I chose you in fantasy hockey. And I'm like, that might have been a bad decision.
I mean, that's a pretty interesting welcome to the NHL moment. Do you have, you know, but the when people talk about a welcome to the NHL moment, it's a moment where, you know, they come face to face with the player they grew up watching or something, you know, big happens or they take a hit that's insane. Do you have a welcome to the NHL moment where you're like, oh, wow, okay, I'm here?
Mario Lemieux, by far. I think we played Pittsburgh. It was in Pittsburgh, and you see Mario, and it was like Yogs, and it was – I ran into Mario and, well, ran into him. I tried to like body him and take a one-on-one, and he's 6'6". He's huge. He's a monster. And you forget how big, and you always think the skill and how big and strong he was. And it was something else to get to play against a guy like that. You know, obviously a legend, top player ever to play in the game. And he was something else. And lucky, it was interesting because I got to meet him later on in my career after I retired. We've met a few times, and he's the nicest guy in the world. Really is an ambassador for the league, the way he takes and treats everybody with a ton of respect. We went out for dinner at one of the NHL awards nights, and it was amazing. So he's a great individual, obviously an experienced welcome to the NHL moment where you're a young kid trying to defend against one of the best ever. And he got the best of me that night. So,
you know, I'm kind of jumping a little bit, but you know, you retired, you were 37. And it seems like, you know, it's harder and harder. I mean, I don't know statistically, but it seems harder and harder to make it to 37 in the NHL. It seems like I wonder if, you know, the days of mentorship are dwindling. There's always going to be veterans, but you know, it's so important.
I agree. I think it's, you know, part of that is one of the things that was sort of I don't want to say it was a foregone conclusion, but some people did see it coming when they introduced a cap, because the veterans, it really comes down to how do you, analytics got into it, and how do you basically portray locker room, and how do you portray, like, does he still give to the game? And let's face it, like, you have people on your entry level contracts. It's a lot cheaper than trying to sign a veteran who, you know, his number counts against the cap all the time. Whereas entry level, you can move up and down the lineup. Like, say you have five guys that could replace one guy, and they're like, well, for money, and at the end of the year with cap and how much teams are balancing cap numbers, you know, you sign a guy over 36, you know, 35, and you try and get rid of him, he still counts against your cap. Whereas entry level, you have so much more. And that was just something that they saw coming. And we didn't think it would happen as quickly as it did. You know, usually when I first got, it was in 04 when they brought in the cap, veterans used to get all the money after 32. They'd own your unrestricted free agency. That's when guys got paid. And it flipped instantly almost, where it was like, now you're trying to pay into the middle and you're trying to buy guys through their restricted free agency. So it was you know, and I think it's a missing part of the puzzle. I think it's a hard when the teams actually get it or they get lucky. You know what I mean? Like you draft a certain guy who's also your best player, but he's also your best character guy. That's rare. And those guys are rare, I think. Mm-hmm. And not to say that guys are bad character, but there's different. It's ebb and flow. There's guys that are really good. You glue guy in the locker room, this and that. And I think those are gone.
You're right. I mean, there are no analytics for glue guys, right?
Right. It's a hard one. And it's such an important piece of the puzzle. It's not baseball. We're not baseball. We're not in a situation where you go grab the best pitcher and you can change the game. Doesn't matter if your pitcher's a good guy or whatever. He's an individual. He's out there. Hockey has so many more dynamics where everybody, like your top guys play 20 minutes, your bottom guys play 12. So it's like you need everybody. Mm-hmm. And you need all that dressing room pulling in the same direction. And it can change. I've been on teams where it's been great, and I've been on teams where it hasn't been as good. And it really shows with the product on the ice.
Well, I won't ask you about the situations in which it hasn't been good, but I do wonder, you know, if there was anybody in your early years who was that for you, who was your, you know, veteran mentor?
I think there was a lot. I think Dean Lombardi did a great job positioning veterans around when, you know, the guys like Patty Marleau, me, Stewie, were around here. If I look back, like Gary Suter, Tony Granato, Stefan Matteau, Brian Marchment was my first D partner, my first everything. I slept at his house. He had me over for dinner. It was like, he was just a great individual, and he was a glue guy. He was a guy that did anything for the team, lived breathed and slept hockey. He was amazing. And you look at, you know, all those types of guys that they surrounded us young guys with, where they were unselfish. They knew, like, Tony was like, you're going to play a long time. Mushy's like, you guys are here because we're here as a stopgap. You know, he understood his role. Do you know what I mean? Like, I felt like I did a good job passing that same mentality on my last few years in San Jose. I had the Matty Irwins, the Jason Demers and stuff like that. And we talked, we chatted, I was in and out of the lineup with them. You know what I mean? And we tried to maintain that stability, and it's a complete flip. It's hard to deal with as a player when you go from being a 1-2 to a 5-6-7.
Mm-hmm.
And that flip is hard, but you know, you got to enjoy it because it's the time at the rink and that special times with the guys. And that's the stuff you miss the most. And that was the most special.
Say more about that, because I mean, any transition in life is difficult, but when you're like one thing for such a long time, you know, you're Scott Hannon, NHL player. And then, you know, you start shifting out of that role and all of a sudden you make the decision to retire. Was that a comfortable decision for you to make? Like, did you feel ready? Are you ever ready?
No, I think I want to touch on something you said there is, like, you know, Scott Hannon, NHL player. But if you look deeper than that, like, it was Scott Hannon, hockey player, like, since the time I was four, right? Like, so people ask all the time when we were sitting at 30 and 30, what are you going to do when you retire? I'm like, I don't know. And people are like, how do you not know? And I'm like, I probably couldn't answer the question rightfully at the time. But when you look at it now, like, if I look at my retirement years, anywhere from when I was in Nashville to Denver, I got traded. I thought I was done in Nashville. And if I was done in Nashville, I'm ending up in Denver and I'm never in San Jose and I'm never retired here. I'm never doing the things I'm doing here.
Right.
So your life changes in a moment. I remember getting that call at a breakfast joint in Nashville. And I thought it was April Fool's. And that was because of the lockout. That was when the trade deadline was. And guys are like, I'm hearing all over the news, you're coming back to San Jose. I'm like, no, I'm not. Aha. April Fool's. And you know what I mean? I thought they were bugging me because I didn't heard from my agent, hadn't heard from anybody. And then, you know, the trainers call and everything like that. So, and finally I do come back and I ended up playing really well, signing two more years. And it was great. And then I ended up here. So, like, to know when you're going to end, and it is a hard transition. There's no doubt about it. Like, mm-hmm. anybody that says it isn't, it's a hard transition into retirement. But I think you got to maintain some level of, you know, for me, I had a good group here. I love the beach. I went and surfed every day. So I still worked out every morning like I was going to train to play. I changed it up to try and be more surfing oriented. And I went surfing 2-3 times a week. I went up to the mountains and I skied. My wife was gracious enough to allow me that area of outlet, because I jumped into coaching right away. So I coach my kids, but you know, it was a little bit more lax than it is now. Like, now we're 4 days a week, whereas they were just in young levels where they practice like once or twice a week. So I could leave on a Tuesday morning and come back Wednesday night and still catch practice on Thursday. And I made little 24-hour ski trips. I slept in my van up on the mountain. And I surfed and I did surf trips. So it was a way to keep that competitive mentality still moving along.
Before we get into your coaching career, just talk a little bit about being in San Jose. I mean, first of all, you sign here, still early days with the Sharks as a franchise. But then there's a long run of just really fantastic teams, really fantastic years. You know, what did you make of this part of the world when you first got here?
It was something else. Being from Vancouver, it was easy. Like, if you look at San Francisco, it's a lot like a Vancouver. You know, it's on the ocean. And if, you know, San Jose is not too far away from there. And it's just, I love being close to the beach. I was immediately attracted to Santa Cruz and that area. Me and Mark Smith, who are good buddies to this day. And we were roommates when we first came into the league. So, you know, we had an affinity for the ocean, and I loved it here, and it was great. Obviously, we're a young up and coming team and we were playing well, and that even adds to the, you know, to the energy that it had here. So I've always enjoyed it. That's why when we came back and I signed that last few years of my career, we ended up calling this place home, and we ended up selling our place in Denver, and we ended up living here. My wife, I met here, so her family was here as well, but I love the area.
So now you're, well, you're still Scott Hannon, the hockey player, so we'll stick with that. Or are you?
I don't know. I'm more the father, the coach now, Coach Hannon. My, coach. You know, I think that that's about it now sometimes.
I mean, how, you know, I know how much time you invest, you know, two sons playing 4 days a week, you said, but I'm sure you invest a lot more time than that. There's travel involved. Why do you love it so much?
That's a good question. I mean, when I retired, did I think I was going to be coaching? I don't know. And at first you're like, well, what do you have to offer? Because you honestly ask yourself that. You've been playing it so long that you almost take for granted what you know and what you've gone through and what you've, your knowledge of the game. And it's a learning curve to try and figure out how to teach that to people, especially kids. You know, you're like, how do I teach running? Though you got to break it down, right? Like, it's right. Like, just do this, 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 and this. It's not that easy. So I jumped in early. I went through all the classes and I was on the ice with my sons. And that really just kind of went from there. I really started enjoying it. I really started to see the enjoyment the kids had on the ice, what, you know, their enjoyment and what I could teach them. I did Little Sharks, which is a learn to play program that, you know, I still do to this day. It's actually kind of amazing that I'm still doing it. And you forget how long ago. I think it's been how long I've been retired, almost eight years. And I'm running into kids that I got into the program that, like, I remember picking up, they have pictures of me and they're like 14, 15 now, right? So they're like five at the time. So you're like sitting there going, it's kind of a crazy experience when you walk in there and they're like, oh, you coached me from here. And it's, you know, I love giving back. I never thought I would get so much out of it because I don't look at it as anything other than that. I get to give back, but it gives me so much more than I put in.
How do you balance your kids? How old are Gage and Owen exactly?
Gage is 13 going on 14 or going on 18, you know, and then my youngest is 11.
Okay. So how do you balance fatherhood and coaching? I mean, I think that has to be a fine balance at times.
You know, I learned this from, I'm not sure who, but I've carried this with me. And I don't know if I heard it on a coaching thing or what, but it was a great question when poised. Because it's tough. You know, you go through a game and you wonder, how am I being too hard on them? Am I not being? Am I, you know, being too soft? And there's obviously a situation where you're always worried about people thinking that your son is getting something because of you. And that's, I don't want that. And when we talk about breaking down a game, which is obviously hard because you're the coach and they want to learn from you, I ask him a simple question, because my eldest, especially, my youngest doesn't care. He doesn't really want to break down too much, but my oldest does. He's starting to get to that age. And he asked me questions. Well, what'd you think about this? And my simple question to him is, do you want me to answer like a coach or like a dad? And I think that it's helped us set boundaries, because he gets to choose.
Right.
So when he wants me to analyze it like a coach, I'm there to analyze it like a coach. But if he chooses dad, that's a completely different. And sometimes, you know, kids, like, you realize when you're coaching, sometimes they don't need to be told they made a mistake. You know what I mean? Or they don't need it to be, they know. And these kids are smarter than we give them credit for. So sometimes they need a hug, they need a pat, you know, and that's where it ends.
I like that. I like that. I see you at the games all the time when you're not working, you're there and your kids are with you a lot. Why do you like to be so connected still to the Sharks organization?
I think it feels like home. They drafted me. And being back here, I was treated so well. And I think, especially lately, I think it was they've really welcomed the alumni as far as a group. You know, we've got our suite there. We've got the ability to get into the rink. And, you know, I love being around the game. And it's special that your kids do. You know, early on, my kids, when I first retired, they were too young. Games at 7:30 and your kids are 9 and 8, you know, 7. You can't take them to games. And now my 13-year-old loves it. He gets to go down there with his buddies that are playing. He plays AAA with, and they're like a really tight team, and they want to go do all these things together. And you give them a little bit of leash and allow them to experience that. It's great. And I love doing anything at the rink. You know, if it's, I'm at either Sharks Ice, and I know I said 4 days, but it's probably 6 or 7, and plus everything else. And then we're doing you know, the pre and post game shows. I'm with you and I'm with, you know, Brody and everybody. It's great. I like being around it. I like the kids. My kids get to experience it that way. You know, it's pretty special.
It's family too, right? I mean, like you said, right. It feels like home. It's a way of introducing them to their extended family, which I think is wonderful. So I have to get to your broadcasting career. Well, how did that start? Did you have a sense that you might move into that at all, or did that come calling?
I didn't. I remember it was playoffs. I think it might have been the 2015 run to the playoffs, and there was a situation where it was, what series would it have been? I'm not even positive. And they asked if I wanted to come out, and they had the game at the rink and they wanted an extra voice. And I said, sure, I'll give it a shot. And I went down there and it kind of was natural. I did it and they liked it. And they asked me to come out again. And then we started to do like a little thing. And I think Brownie cut my tie because I wore a yellow tie when they played Vegas, and we ended up beating them, and then it turned into something and it was kind of fun. And then the next year it was like, well, do you want to do pre and post? And then it turned into something more. And I started to get a few games here and there. And then when it really turned a corner was probably COVID, because COVID hit and Jamie Baker, who had been here for so long, he left. And I think for COVID, it was hard. They didn't have anybody to come in. They couldn't get anybody to come in. And I did all the radio games. I started to do some color, and I ended up doing – shoot, man. And I was doing some pre and post before that, but then I did almost all the games. I'm not sure I didn't do any because we could be at the rink, right? So me and Dan just did them at the rink and we didn't have to travel on the road. And that was a big thing for me, is I can't go on the road. I was coaching the kids. I was around the kids. I don't want to go on the road. I've done that song and dance before.
Yep.
And then when we came out of that is when I knew that the Sharks needed somebody full time, and that's great. Like I understand their situation and mine. And so they've, you know, and obviously having Drew back has been phenomenal for the program. And I just kind of stepped back again, and I stepped back into, you know, so I got back on NBC, and then sure enough, Brownie left. So it was like, you know, and then they wanted me to do more, but again, it's hard because of the kids and the amount of time I'm at Sharks Ice, and I didn't want to give up weekends or anything like that. So I only have certain days I can do it. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and I enjoy it. It keeps kind of the foot in the door. It allows me to do all that. I have fun with it.
Yeah. Flex is a different muscle. I think you're really fantastic at being the analyst. Talk about, and I mean, we could both have a conversation about, you know, the balancing act, right? We're working for the Sharks. We love the team. The team is having a tough season. Obviously, you want to remain positive, but you have to dissect the play. So how do you find that balance as an analyst?
It can be tough. I mean, I've been on that other side where I've been in the room. And I think I've tried to be short and concise with the criticism and then focus on the big picture. And I think, you know, the fans know this probably rebuild has been long overdue. And I think it's easy to call it a rebuild in the summer. And it's very hard to live a rebuild in January. And I think that that's a good perspective to keep. You know, are we putting, you know, we knew it was going to be hard and we knew it was going to be rough. Are we going to be able to compete against the top teams? Sometimes it's a mistake. Sometimes it's just, I don't want to say personnel, but that's a big part of it. You know, it's, can't have Connor McDavid, but you know, to rebuild, you have to get through getting good picks, and you have to go through that building process. And that's part of the team. I feel bad for the guys on the team. I think it's a hard situation to be in. You know, I haven't been on a team that's been that struggled as hard without a huge amount of injuries, and they're going through some injury stuff too. Not having Cooch back there, I think is a huge, anytime you take like that out of the lineup, it hurts any team, but especially the Sharks at this moment. So I feel for the guys and what they go through, but also trying to understand the process it's going to take. Because when you have a team that's so good for so long, these are the pains you go through. Look at Colorado. They struggled from 2010 when I was there, and they tried to do a little bit of what the Sharks tried to do is hold on. And, you know, Sakic was there. He got to retire, but you know, once they decided on a rebuild, they really decided on one. Mm-hmm. And it was a struggle from 2010 I got traded out of there to Washington, and then it was years. I'm not even sure when they first made the playoffs, but you know, think of the players they went through: Duchesne, Ryan O'Reilly, Paul Stastny, Chris Stewart. Like when they didn't get their pieces, they moved on from them. Right. And they got Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar, and things pop, turn around, Rantanen, and those types of players, right? So unfortunately, those are all drafted players. So you got to get a little bit of luck, but you also got to get top picks.
I'm going to leave you with this. What has hockey given you?
Everything. I mean, if I look at it from that standpoint, I'm here today with my kids, my wife, and everything because of the sport. I was able to move down here. You know, I met my wife here in San Jose. You know, I got to play a long, good career, and I got to leave on my terms, which I feel is special, and not many guys get to do that. So that was a blessing. And then, you know, I'm sitting here today talking to you because of the same thing. So it feels pretty special.
Well, it's a great place to land. However you got here, however I got here, I'm equally grateful. And I'm grateful you took the time to chat today.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on. It was great.
So little did I know when I was chatting with Scott that he was working that night doing color commentary for the Barracuda game, which was airing on NBC Sports California. So the man is busy. So thank you, Scott, for taking the time. Really always a pleasure. And I really enjoyed that interview. Really nice to get a chance to hear about Scott's career and how interesting it was that he just simply didn't really have a clue that he was going to be an NHL player. He just loved to play. I love that. Thanks to all of you for listening. On we go. So more 2024. We have lots more episodes to come. Some really great guests in the hopper. So I'll be back with you in another couple weeks. In the meantime, you know what I'm going to say. Keep your fins above water.